Hi, everyone. God help us all to another edition of Literary Loitering. Yes, I'm Andrew, and joining me on the Geek Show's dedicated Art and Books podcast, it's Graham.
Hello.
And finally, return appearance from Sarah.
Hi.
Hello. It's been a while.
It has. I've been having adventures.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's all we need to say about that.
Yeah, no information about any of them, which makes me suspect you're a spy.
No, I'm actually just under contract to Netflix. I can't say anything more.
Yes. Netflix, who seem to have decided that promoting their new films is not disruptive enough for them. But yes, as Andrew says, we are the Geek Show's dedicated books and arts and things podcast, and we're certainly going to be somewhere in the vicinity of that, God. Who knows, for the next hour or so. Shall we start with an old Lit Loit favourite from years gone by?
Yes, but we have to.
Are we talking about the word of the year here?
We are talking about the word of the year.
I've missed word of the year and the soul-crushing sense of disappointment it brings with it every time we do it.
Yeah, this is, I'm not going to say it's as good as last year's word of the year, which was Youthquake. Remember that?
That to me is an 80s word associated with a band called Dead or Alive, who may have had, I think, had a record called Youthquake.
Did they?
And it means nothing else to me. It's completely passed me by since that time. I think so.
That has spun my understanding of the topic right round, baby, right round like a red. But yeah, this year's word of the year is a bit more familiar, so familiar in fact that you may question whether this word existed before the year.
I don't think it did.
No, it can't have. It's toxic.
Yes, stunning choice of word. As in, I'm stunned. Maybe by poison.
Yeah, I don't think that's how word of the year is supposed to work.
No.
I can't wait till next year when the word is table.
Well, the logic behind word of the year is there might be a neologism or it might be an existing word that has been used an unusual amount of times. And in this case, toxic has been used frequently because of everyone celebrating the 14th anniversary of Britney Spears' hit song of the same name.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that's mainly it. Well, it was a fantastic song and it's still on my iPod. Well, it was before it was stolen.
Yes.
The classic tune.
Who stole your iPod?
I don't know. It was there 1 minute and then it wasn't.
This is really exciting. I didn't expect...
Didn't you see the news?
I've got to admit, I turned off after half an hour of waiting for Theresa May to make that speech. It could have been about the iPod. I don't know.
I think she might have taken my iPod and just be dancing somewhere.
Yes, she's got to do something to take her mind off the imminent collapse of her government.
And we know the dance runs through her.
Yes, like diarrhea.
Well, it's okay, because I can exclusively reveal that Sarah, the iPod, was in fact stolen by a drug addict.
What?
Because they were too high and can't come down in the air, and it's all around. Can you feel me now?
Oh, yes. Now I understand. Oh, it makes total sense.
Oxford Dictionary's nonsense justification for saying that this is the word of the year when we all know the true meaning is that toxic has been used in discussions about everything from the environment to masculinity to the scurple poisonings, which of course is what Britney Spears was singing about.
Try to warn us.
Yes, they also have some runners-up, which really are a fantastic look into the hell world that we now inhabit.
Oh, I missed this bit. What's the runners-up?
The 8 runners-up in order of no particular order, but I'm saving the one that makes me the most angry to last.
I see it.
Gaslighting.
Mm-hmm.
Incel.
Uh-huh.
Doesn't feel great that it's kicked off with those two, but let's push on. Tech lash.
I've not heard that one.
No.
What does it mean?
That. I assume it means a backlash against big tech, but since they've clearly made it up, we may never know.
Boy, I really get how Dante felt now.
When he was in the early circles of hell and thought, oh God, there's still another six of these to go. Gammon.
Yes. Yeah, that has been used a lot.
Mostly by me. I think this one's on me, guys. I'm sorry.
Well, the next one's on me.
Hang on. No, wait. We're saving that.
Okay.
Orbiting is one of them. Because
that's a weird one. You wouldn't have thought that was so popular.
Yeah. Are we still angry about Pluto being demoted? Is that what it's about?
Yeah.
Yes. Because you can't just decide it's not a planet.
Obviously, some of us are more annoyed than others.
Oh, steady, Andrew. You're getting a bit gammon there. Orbitourism is one of them.
Yeah, I've not really heard that one being bandied about.
I haven't heard it. And I've read articles about excessive tourism where you'd think that would be one of its natural habitats.
Mm.
All I'm saying is, what do you expect? If you're going to tell people, oh, no, don't bother with Pluto, it's not even a planet. Of course we're going to get over tourism. God, morons.
Gird yourself for these last two, because these are, God.
Okay, hold on, I'll take my attempts at making levity and put them in the box. Leave that by the side of the road. Won't need that where we're going.
I mean, I hate to bring the mood down, but people have used the word cakeism this year.
What does that mean? Is that a vitriolic feeling towards baked sweet things?
That would be good if it was like a trigger response to the new Great British Bake Off.
Mm.
It's not, though. It's a derogatory reference to Britain's EU negotiating position, which you will remember Boris Johnson defined as having our cake and eating it.
Uh-huh.
And then, I believe it was either Michael Barnier or Donald Tusk responded with something that I've always thought, but I always thought, no, this is just me, no one else thinks about this. He said, if you have a cake and you eat it, you then do not have a cake.
Hmm. That's true. At the moment, I'm not seeing which side of the cake debate each party is on. Because people are having cake and are they... I mean, you eat cake. I'm failing to sort of understand...
understanding of cake is that... You have it for the purpose of eating it.
And then you eat it, yes.
But once you've ate it, you don't have a cake.
That's true.
The whole thing is poorly worked out. It's a perfect metaphor, really, for our Brexit strategy, and that's... cakeism, I regret to say, is up there. And finally...
Oh, God.
Yeah, we're going to have to go for it. Big dick energy.
Big dick energy. Good
I think
grief.
He was a blues singer in the 20s.
You know, sometimes when you walk into a bar and you see someone there that you weren't expecting, but it makes perfect sense that they're there. But they're not a friend. But they're more someone you kind of hoped you'd never have to think about ever again in your life. And their name is Big Rick Energy. But everyone calls him Big Dick Energy.
It is astonishing to think that were it not for the overuse of the word toxic, Oxford English Dictionary's phrase of the year could have been commemorating the long-lasting relationship between Ariana Grande and Pete Davidson.
Oh, how long was that? Like 3 months or something? It was so brief.
It was like 1.5 Brexit secretaries.
It was like 3 hair colours for Davidson.
Yes.
As much as I like Pete Davidson.
I do sort of like Pete Davidson. I think he's sort of handled the aftermath of this well, but there is absolutely no way that this should be something that's like in an actual dictionary that people might consult for information.
Is it applied to that situation then, Big Dick Energy? Is that what it's been applied to?
It's hard to tell because I don't want to think about it. I think that's the real barrier of it. The fact that my brain capsizes as I even try and think about this.
I think there's a lot of things that are kind of spurious and don't quite fit the mark, but we're kind of stuck with it now type situation.
Yeah, well, I suspect that Big Dick Energy is actually a plot by the Pentagon. It's, in essence, do you know the Monty Python Most Dangerous Joke in the World sketch?
Yeah.
Essentially, that. Just introducing a phrase into the lexicon, it just simply trying to comprehend it causes just constant bleeding from the eyes, nose, and neck.
So it's a phrase that's been deployed as a weapon.
Yes, there was a covert attempt to sneak it into the dictionary.
Big dictionary, Yenny.
It's interesting all the words that come alongside when people have done searches on the word toxic or use the word toxic. That's interesting. Mm-hmm. Like the number one being chemical, but also especially the number two being masculinity. I'm very surprised about that.
It sort of hops around, doesn't it? It's chemical, masculinity, substance, gas, environment, relationship, culture, waste, algae, air. So every time you're sort of settling into it being about chemicals or something.
Or the weather.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then it comes up with relationship and environment and culture, which are kind of like a populated thing. I mean, I know there's like a poisonous environment in, you know, a chemical works in the middle of Teesside or whatever, but...
That's probably not what they're searching for.
No, apparently no. It's like a toxic environment. They give the example of Google that have had a toxic environment.
Oh, right.
Workplace environments.
Yes. Must walk out of Google, the fashion mogul Philip Green disgraced, and the Speaker of the House of Commons accused of misusing his official powers to cover up allegations of bullying in Westminster.
Mm-hmm.
I've got to say, I'm kind of on Burkle's side with that. I think more MPs should be bullied more frequently.
Well, I can't possibly comment. Sorry?
They're just in the street. Just go up and get push them about a bit. It's not just me, right? Everyone wants to just walk up to Jacob Rees-Mogg and just steal his glasses.
I want to take his top hat off, punch a hole through the top, and then just put it back on his head.
I don't think that's what they mean by voter engagement, though.
But from the filth of Big Dick Energy, we move to some actual historic filth that stood the test of time. You see, it's better.
It's not filth, though, because it's literary.
So
it can't be.
Big Dick Energy is in the dictionary.
Yeah.
But yes, the Bodleian Libraries is putting on an exhibition of books from their fee category. Now, what do you think the fee category entails?
Well, I think it's a Greek letter. Phi, I call it phi, other people call it phi maybe, and a lot
certainly
of...
people who can't pronounce Greek letters definitely call it phi. I think we've established this.
And it's a lot of Greek houses in the traditional collegiate system in America, Phi Beta Kappa or whatever.
What the hell's that?
A fraternity. Or possibly a sorority, but I think it's a fraternity.
I was talking more about the ominous rumble.
Yes! The seventh seal has been opened.
Oh yes, just ignore that. I'm closing the gate as we speak. It's fine.
It's too late. The Buddhic energy has already leaked through.
Have you? Is that like, can you literally hear the train passing?
Was that what it was?
Yeah,
I could.
Oh, I beg your pardon.
Where are you recording this?
and other big thrusting vehicles.
Yes.
I've just been scrolling through this. And one of the books is perfect for internet scrolling, because you see just a nice lovely picture of a big tall tower, and then you scroll over, and it's called Barbaric Objects and Remains.
Perfect.
I mean, the objects is fine, the remains I'm kind of worried about.
Mm-hmm.
But yes, the fee category, before we were distracted by, aptly enough, a train going into a tunnel, is the Bodleian Library's category for all of the filth they get sent.
Yes, which other people aren't allowed or weren't allowed to access.
Mm.
And they'd been put away and locked away, and you could only have special permission, etc.
Yes.
Until now.
Until now. And some of the titles held in there include The Love Books of Ovid by, I forget who, Barbara Cartland, I think. The Picture of Dorian Gray, which seems to me to be a bit of an overreaction.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. I mean, at the time, you know what they were like at the time, though.
Yeah, but
some people are just super into paintings of, like, wizened old faces.
Yeah.
You should have that on a T-shirt. Some people are just into people's wizened old faces. Get over it.
Man, Stonewall are going niche at the moment, aren't they?
Yeah.
Oh, is this like one of those never underestimated men who does something and was born in whatever?
Mm.
Never underestimate a man who stares at pictures of wizened old faces and then locks himself in his room.
And Lady Chatterley's on there as well.
Of course.
Of course.
Yep.
Oh my god.
What?
I've just noticed that a Monty Python book is on there.
Yes.
Yeah.
Did they have a naked bum on the cover?
That's not like is that really so bad?
Well, it's no phallic objects and remains.
No, it's no pop-up Kama Sutra. What?
So that's what big dick energy is.
Yes, it does raise the question of what is popping up exactly. There's also Sex, the Madonna book.
Yeah.
I assume has been, you know, suppressed for its reminders that Vanilla Ice was once a thing.
Do you know, I'm sure I saw a copy of that at the time. Mm. And I really should remember more about it. You would think I would remember it better, but I don't. It was an attractive book, I seem to remember.
It's weirdly sort of vanished from the popular memory, hasn't it? It's like, I don't know. Would it?
Yes, I don't know. That's mysterious. I don't know. I don't know whether it would be. I mean, how long is that ago? 30 years ago? 40 years ago?
Yeah, it's probably about 30.
30-something, yeah. Probably quite tame compared to today.
Yeah. And also that there is something that I haven't heard of before, the first modern European work of pornography, the Satyria Sudatica. Look, it's in Latin.
Satadica.
Satadica, yes, the Encyclopedia Dramatica, which is, I mean, no one can define what pornography means, no one can really define what modern means. So the first modern work of pornography, there's clearly going to be a massive consensus about that, isn't there?
Mm. Yeah, people are always going to sort of claim that one thing or another is, I guess.
Yeah.
And because, like, with every claim is the possibility of making your name in academia, so.
Yeah.
What does satanica mean?
It would be better if we made a definition up.
Hmm.
I think it's a type of Brazilian carnival dance involving holding 5 rattles, and you have a choice of how you keep them on your person.
Ah, you see, I think it's dice that's made out of fluff.
Oh, wow, like what people in the 70s used to hang on their car rearview mirrors.
Yes, that's it, yeah. Exactly, yeah.
Filth.
Films. Tom of Finland's in there as well, which it rang a bell with me, and I was thinking, gosh, that sounds like something. Is it an old saint like Hildegard of Bingen? No, it's really not. And I think I must have looked this up a while ago and sort of forgotten it, and again, somehow forgotten about it. How did I forget about that? But it looks like a kind of, I don't know whether it's like an 80s or 70s sort of aesthetic.
It was a 70s thing, yeah. It used to be big among British punks, just because of the offensiveness factor. Really, Sid Vicious used to have a Tom of Finland illustration on his shirt.
Really?
Yeah.
Interesting.
If you don't know what we're talking about, listeners, why not Google it at work with the safe search off?
Yes, definitely do that.
I mean, come on, Grim. Give the listeners some credit. They're not going to fall for that kind of shenanigans. They've one too many times. Oh, those are some rough facts, gentlemen.
Say what you want.
Everything's literally just called dick.
But what's its energy like?
Built like sports trophies. It's weird.
They have a kind of thrusting energy.
Yeah.
Yeah. And also, they're very much no stranger to polish.
Yes.
Somehow.
Yeah, which is strange because he's not called Tom of Poland. So that exhibition, I suspect that could be a pretty big hit.
Mm.
A less successful library is the public library at Barrow Island Primary School.
Nice segue.
Yes.
Yep, cool. We are enjoying that segue. Just going to close this tab out. Oh, no, I bookmarked it by accident.
Yes. Barrow Island Primary School Library in Cumbria has checked out a grand total of technically no books whatsoever in the last year.
Zero. None. Nada. Zip.
Now technically, 18 books were checked out of the library by IT staff making sure the machine worked.
So Barrow Island is a thing.
I don't know. And Andrew, was your computer like healthy enough after that to look up Barrow Island?
I can certainly try. I navigate through a morass of proper feds.
Well, I'm being shown pictures of a place with a coast.
That's a start.
Yeah, which is a start.
Yep, it is apparently an island.
Mm. Right. So, you know, how many people can there be to read these things? According to this BBC report, the area's libraries as a whole were used by 844 adults and 538 young people in 2 months, which, okay, is quite a bit. But how many of them are primary school children?
Mm.
Yeah, so it's not like the library isn't getting used then.
And it could be just one old lady who reads an awful lot of Agatha Christie or Mills and Boone, just repeatedly visiting.
Obviously, the fun thing to do is to speculate that this library has failed because all of its books are rubbish.
Maybe they should do like a collaboration with the Bodleian Library Phi section.
Yes, I imagine the primary school children of Babel Island would go mad for a book of phallic symbols. Let's face it, after you've lent a book out to a bunch of kids, it's full of phallic symbols, whether you want it or not.
Yeah, I was going to say that about Ovid's book, which, you know, it said you can get an illustrated and a non-illustrated version, and I just wondered if somebody was drawing phalluses in the margin anyway, Ovid in his little doodles.
Everything's an illustrated version if you just try hard enough. What if the Barrow Island Library is actually the secret runoff from Fort Pedalsmith's?
Oh, and wow!
Stocked full of excellent grey.
In a primary school.
Yes. So the raiders won't know where to look for it, Graham.
I suppose. I was going to make a reference to it being safe where no one would read them, but that's the whole problem. No one's reading them anyway. That's why they're ending up in charity shops.
I've noticed that the 844 adults that visited the Barrow Island Library constitute 1/3 of the population. So I'm thinking that's really not bad.
Yeah, they've got a lot of readers there.
Yeah, it's pretty good. And 1/5 of kids.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I've changed my tune from what I was making fun of them earlier for. Get off Babel Island's back, Mr. Newspaper Man. Embracing my inner Glenda Slack.
Yeah, come on, BBC. It's obvious that all these adults are just going and reading the books inside the library. That they're real novels, they're not made of cheese. You can't prove anything.
God, imagine if every time I idly thumbed through a book in Waterstones it counted as a sale. I'd be bankrupt by now.
I'm going to go back to them. This is my bold new marketing strategy.
Let's go.
We coat all the books in a strong adhesive. So as soon as you just touch them, that's it. You have them for life now. And either pay up or you are forced to live out the rest of your days as the book display.
Standing in the window is a terrible warning for the dangers of books. Yes. Should we go on to some that I can't segue to at all?
It doesn't make an easy segue, does it?
It really doesn't, no.
Hold on a minute. Maybe there is. You've been talking about checking out books from a library.
Oh.
Let's move on to Czech citizenship.
Yes. Oh, that's good.
That is good. I like it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So the Prime Minister of... Oh, God, we're going to have to call it Czechia, aren't we?
Hmm?
That's what they call it now. Czechia.
Does it? Is it? Really?
Yeah, it's not the Czech Republic anymore.
Oh, People's Former Republic of... The Former Republic of Czechoslovakia?
No. Sorry, just Czechia.
Just Czechia? Oh, fair enough. Czechia.
So it is. I've just checked. Yourself.
Blimey! Is that a recent change?
Yeah, last couple of years, I think.
Oh, yeah. I was thinking in the last week, but okay.
Oh, right.
And I'd somehow missed it being on the news.
Well, you know, country news tends to go a bit slower than everything else. I think that's fair enough. But yeah, that's the worst rebranding since Opal Fruits became Starburstness.
Ugh, that's terrible.
But yeah.
But they're not even opal shaped, they're square.
But they're not star shaped either.
Because it's a star that's burst, Graham. God.
In a perfect square, Andrew.
Yes. Even just like in nature.
For a man with such exacting astronomical beliefs about Pluto, you have really disappointed me with this.
Look, I got caught in a hole and I had to just dig further.
Well, speaking of people who absolutely cannot back down even when they've been conclusively proven to be wrong, the Czech government is offering to restore the citizenship of the author Milan Kundera 40 years after the country's now completely defunct communist government removed it from him.
Only 40 years later? Wow. The compassion.
I mean, the wheels of bureaucracy turn fast.
But they did have to work out what country it was he'd actually been exiled from.
Yeah. That's a very valid point. You'd have to change all the paperwork. Copy it out in triplicate, probably.
Yes, they just wanted to wait until this solid gold Czechia idea passed. And then they'd be, oh God, Czechia. I mean, our country's falling to bits, but we still cling to the name Great Britain. It's not accurate anymore, but it's the one we've got and everyone knows it.
Hmm.
Czechia definitely sounds like a brand of discount supermarkets.
Yes. Yeah. I think but they've just sort of taken out the Oslovak.
Yeah.
And then put the ends together.
It sounds like the adjective that means more Czechy.
Yeah. It's a comparative that we didn't know existed before.
No, that the suit doesn't have enough squares on it. I need it checkier.
Yes. Of Milan Kundera, for the past 40 years, you have legally been denied to be checky. Now, at last, you may be checkier.
He stands a chance of being checkier.
What if it's all just another bank, and as soon as they let him in, they're going to change the country name again and go, oh, no, no, so. You're a citizen of Czechia.
Like a game of whack-a-mole. Yeah, he looks a bit, I think, a bit like Malcolm McDowell.
Oh, I can see that.
Yeah. See that slap a mesh tank top on him and it's like I'm watching Silent Hill again.
Is that a happy place you often flash back to?
I mean, no. That one's down.
Well, final story, and I think this one might go on a bit. It's been a fine year for humorless, grey-haired, middle-aged men making rules of essential advice in list form. And Jonathan Franzen, our old friend, has jumped on this exciting new bandwagon. Yes, Jonathan Franzen, who we previously covered with his essay about Donald Trump that got round to mentioning Donald Trump in paragraph 16.
Oh, that guy!
He has, I mean, firstly, who wouldn't want to take writing advice from that guy, right?
Mm-hmm.
He's got all the hot tips, like if you're writing and you need to pad it out, start asking what an essay is.
Uh-huh. Definitions are always helpful for padding out anything.
I genuinely thought that Trump essay was going to end with, in summary, Donald Trump is a land of contrasts.
I think that might be the reason why toxic masculinity is number two in that list.
Yeah. Jonathan Franzen is like the hero to barely passing lit students across the country, isn't he?
Yes. Which is quite apt, as I don't think I've ever met anyone who's finished one of his novels.
That's true. That I admit to that.
But yes, but before we start, should we have a listen to Jonathan Franzen's 10 tips for writing proper good, like what he does?
Yes.
Oh, please, yes, but just the tits.
Have you got that Tom of Finland tab open again?
It's always open in my heart.
Number one. something I'm going to have to compose myself, because Jesus, this list. Number one, the reader is a friend, not an adversary, not a spectator.
Unless they leave a bad review, then screw them.
Two, fiction that isn't an author's personal adventure into the frightening or the unknown isn't worth writing for anything but money.
Great, that's... Oh, no!
I mean, the first one isn't great, but that's tailed off spectacularly, hasn't it?
Yeah. I mean, the first one was the sort of empty platitude I was expecting.
Where's Jonathan Franzen adventuring into the frightening or the unknown? He's not Jules Bloody Verne.
Has he really only written 5 novels?
He's written 5 novels, but each of them is as long as 10 novels.
Right, okay.
I mean, is that why he thinks George R.R. Martin is taking so long to write the next Game of Thrones book? He has to keep travelling to the mystical land of Westeros. Like, going about finding out what's going on.
Maybe. Number 3. This is vitally important stuff, this. Never use the word then as a conjunction. We have and for this purpose. Substituting then is the lazy or tone-deaf writer's non-solution to the problem of too many ands on the page.
Wow. I mean, I definitely didn't learn that in third year.
That just seems wrong.
I think it is wrong. I think it's like we learnt about and then, but I mean, they're both equally useful conjunctions when you need a conjunction.
That's all.
Are his book so long because every sentence is I'm going to got a glass of water and at the point in time which is later than the point of time that was previously described, she drank it.
Yes. So he says, don't use then as a conjunction. Then, number 4, is write in third person unless a really distinctive first person offers itself irresistibly. So
then do, you know, that.
Yeah, write in one way unless another way is better, in which point do the better one.
Just call him Tom Waits because he has struck gold.
I've just watched The Ballad of Buster Scruggs as well. It's great.
It is. That's why I needed to work a reference into it somewhere.
Fantastic. Yes. Number 5, when information becomes free and universally accessible, voluminous research for a novel is devalued along with it.
What?
I don't think that's the case. I think he's thinking like a Victorian gentleman there. Like, you know, when you would have to go to a jungle abroad to find a tiny remote village and the plant that grows within. It's not, I mean, it doesn't make sense to me.
When I read Thomas Pynchon, it doesn't matter if the facts he's talking about are very obscure, like the history of the Postal Service in America, or very famous, like September 11th. What sort of matters is what Pynchon does with the facts. I mean, if you just want an author to give you loads of obscure facts, encyclopedias are there.
Yeah, but also you probably want your novels to have some degree of accuracy to them.
No, apparently you don't. That's been devalued because of the bloody internet.
God, he is the hero of barely passing with students.
Sorry, I only skimmed Wikipedia for this, miss, but voluminous research has been devalued. Number 6. We're past the halfway mark, guys. It's okay. This is going to end one day. The most purely autobiographical fiction requires pure invention. Nobody ever wrote a more autobiographical story than The Metamorphosis.
I have a point to make here. I've been reliably informed that Kafka was not at any point literally an insect.
He must have been, because fiction that isn't an author's personal adventure into the frightening or the unknown isn't worth writing for anything but money.
And we all know Franz Kafka was about those sweet dollar bills, you know. he's literally worked out that sometimes fantastical fiction might have an emotional effect. That's his discovery there. That's his voyage into the unknown.
Oh, well done there.
Good work, Franzel. 7. You seem more sitting still than chasing after.
My God, again!
I had to check that one because I thought, have they just thrown in something from the Little Book of Calm to see if it's still...
This is Jonathan Franzen's Why I'm Such a Great Writer, because I sit here in my underpants watching TV all day. Don't worry, not the news, just cartoons.
Well, to counter that, 8 is, it's doubtful that anyone with an internet connection at his workplace is writing good fiction.
Unless he's chasing after voluminous research. I'm sure it's like a profound difference to what he writes.
I mean, you could probably take a voyage into the unknown using the internet. That's possible, right?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, every day you go down like some Wikipedia rabbit hole or some tunnel of YouTube.
Yeah.
I mean, to be fair, this one, at least, I guess I can kind of see it from a standpoint of the internet is just one big distraction.
Yes.
And so you kind of need to separate yourself from that a bit to actually buckle down and get the writing done.
I find it has an effect on focus, not like just not being able to focus, which is classic me. But I think the way that you think afterwards, even if you're not looking at the internet, is kind of scattered. And you might need to rein yourself in a little bit.
I do sometimes find the internet distracting, but I still resent being told that from someone who has basically just written the world's most pretentious clickbait list.
Oh, yeah. He's still a total knob goblin, but that's a new one.
Well, he was right. Number 7 did have me sobbing.
Yes. 9 I'm going to skip over quickly because it's ironically boring, which is interesting verbs are seldom very interesting. But 10, guys, this is the plum. This is the bit of bubblegum at the bottom of the Knickerbocker glory. You have to love before you can be relentless.
Don't you just hate it when you're typing out your list of 10 tips of writing advice? And you forget that you've got autocorrect on.
I'm pretty sure that's the tagline to a perfume advert.
Yes, yeah, that's what it comes across as.
It ends with him in the desert and he looks to the camera and the voiceover goes, "Relentless, a new fragrance by Jonathan Franzen."
You have to love before you can become relentless.
What an absolute clangorous bell he is.
Interesting verbs are seldom very interesting.
Do not use then as a conjunction. The word and is perfectly sufficient for that item.
You see more sitting still than chasing after.
This is getting into Jacques Littereau, our permanent commentator.
I would help out by scrolling back up and reading some of the list, but I don't want to do too much voluminous research.
The reader is my friend, not an adversary or a spectator. Fits that one quite well.
Response has been some positive, as you'd expect. Jody Pickle said, "I am delighted to tell you I've broken every single one of these rules." Christine Estimer wrote, Jonathan Franzen's rules for novelists are all really ordinary in what you'd expect, except for number six. Kafka was not a beetle. Can confirm.
Yeah.
It was going to be, but just he couldn't nail those guitar licks.
He wasn't even the best drummer in the Giant Beatles. A Twitter account called Regular Skeleton says, I like that Jonathan Franzen is such a reviled figure in letters that he can trend in the United States just for writing an article that's like, do not use adverbs and challenge yourself.
Oops, sorry, I just dropped the mouse.
That's even better than a mic drop, which is what I wanted to do after Tessa Dare, the historical romance writer, wrote under a retweet of the link, in which Jonathan Franzen reveals himself to be that guy who mentions Ayn Rand in his Tinder profile.
Oh, he is, isn't he?
But the real peach is some of the parody lists. Patton Oswalt wrote, my seven rules for book writing. One, spelling. Two, have a Frankenstein in it. Three, do not talk about book writing. Four, do not talk about book writing. Five, it should take place on a boat. Six, a scene where a guy splits a bullet in half with a sword. And seven, have a nice plant on your writing desk.
I think I saw that midweek and I was just like, oh, is this like in reference to something or what's this? And I was just like, yeah, that's funny.
It is a better piece of writing advice than anything on Jonathan Franzen's list is do not write a book about a novelist. We have enough. But my favourite one, and I wish I could find attribution to this, if you are the anonymous hero who has written this parody, please contact us on Twitter. You will be joining an illustrious list, including the author of Too Naked for the Nazis, in hitting us up on Twitter, because this is gold. Jonathan Franzen's 10 rules for novelists. 1. Always respect the reader's intelligence. 2. Your main character should be named Schmonathan Franzen. 3. Schmonathan is humble and relatable, even though he has won many awards for being handsome. 4. Everyone who has had sex with Schmonathan remarks that he has the sexual prowess of a man who has been having sex for many years. 5. Schmonathan drives a special car that turns into a plane. 6. Schmonathan is very rich because he invented plane cars. 7. Schmonathan uses his plane car to rescue celebrities who are about to fall into volcanoes, and the celebrities then become his friends. 8. The celebrities like Schmonathan so much that they invite him to all their parties and return his phone calls. 9. Schmonathan is also a famous bird watcher. Other characters will frequently comment on how normal it is to be a bird watcher and that people who bird watch aren't perverts. 10. Never use the word the.
10. Oh, that's so good.
11. It makes you feel slightly more alive when something this stupid happens, doesn't it?
Yeah, I can't help thinking he just scribbled it on the back of his hand when he had to go like down in a lift.
I like that idea, if only because it means that Jonathan Franzen's like third knee-jerk spur of the moment thought about writing is, God, I hate then.
It feels rushed.
Yes. He should have done more voluminous research.
I want to now like change my name to Schmonathan Schmanzen. Right, what are clearly, obviously knockoffs of all of Jonathan Franzen's books. far better and a way better critically used.
You should record audio books, which are just Jonathan Franzen's book, but in a voice that's like this.
That'll tell him.
So, what are our writing tips?
Oh, that's a good one. Try to remain awake.
Don't use too much punctuation. It's just so cluttery.
Try and include at least one character who breakdances.
I'd say, number one, you don't need to start it yet. You've got plenty of time.
Yes.
No, seriously, you've still got so much time. Like, I'm going to hear something. Three. Oh, hey, I've been meaning to watch that movie for ages. I'll just... Number four. Should probably start now, but I'm also quite hungry, so maybe I'll get something to eat. Number five. I'm quite tired now. Maybe I'll start tomorrow. Number six. Oh, Jesus Christ, that needs to be done by, like, 2 minutes. Get someone else to write it.
Yes. I'm pretty sure that's actually James Patterson's 10 tips for writers.
Yeah, I guess if you're James Patterson, then it's 8? 9 obscene profit.
Yes.
Of course, to round it off, 10 money party.
Yes.
Make it rain.
No, call it an interesting money party just to spite Franzen.
Yeah.
Oh, well, I think that about wraps it up for this week, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. We don't have any books to read because I'm still failing to read goddamn picture books.
I played a lot of The Witcher 3 today, which is based on a book.
I'm reading a book by a Doctor Who book by Dale Smith called The Many Hands.
Oh, which Doctor?
It is David Tennant and Freema Agayan. And I've been halfway through that for a while. And I sort of like put it down before summer.
Nice.
got on with bits and bobs, and I need to pick it up really and finish it.
Mm.
It's good. It's nice. It's set in Edinburgh.
I'm making slow progress through The Name of the Rose, which is
Careful of the pages.
Yes, of course. But yeah, that's an unexpectedly nice little roundup. Actually, we should do more. What have we been struggling to read?
I have a book for the show whose name I've completely forgotten, and it is buried somewhere in my room. Wait, no, it's okay. I see it. It's over in the corner.
Oh, phew, emergency over.
Thank God there was mild peril going on there.
Actually, I should have put to a PG rating.
Yes. Anywho, until next week. Not next week. I think we're a fortnightly show. It's late. But yes, until next episode, that's your lot from Literary Loitering. You can find us on iTunes, on Audioboom, Stitcher, anywhere else you can get your podcasts, where you can also check out our sister shows in the Geek Show Network, like Keyframe and Cinema Eclectica and the Geek Show itself, and many, many more. But until next time, I've been Graham.
I've been Sarah.
Then I've been Andrew.
You think you can do it when it's Sarah? What the hell? Is it just me?
I think it must be. It's probably like we exist on some kind of identical wavelength.
Except you guys have got going on what me and Aidan have got going on.
Yeah.
Similar Eclectica, I think.
Which is extremely different from what Stacey's mum has got going on.
Excellent. On that hugely literary note, then, we'll see you again. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Thanks for listening.